Welcome to Now You Know. I'm Catherine Sussman. Today, our guest is Melissa Matlow, Campaign Director at World Animal Protection. Melissa has more than 15 years' experience leading animal welfare and environmental campaigns. Since 2005, she has worked with World Animal Protection to protect the welfare of wild and domesticated animals in Canada and around the world. Currently, she oversees the organization's Canadian campaigns. As part of their Wildlife Not Entertainers campaign, Melissa works with travel companies to implement animal welfare policies and remove cruel wildlife entertainment from their supply chain. Hi, Melissa. It's so nice to have the chance to speak to you today about World Animal Protection's Wildlife Not Entertainers campaign.
Great to be here and talk to you about it.
To begin with, I was wondering if you can just give listeners a brief description of World Animal Protection, its size, and just the kind of work you do.
We used to be known as the World Society for the Protection of Animals, but we changed our name a few years ago. But our purpose and our mission is still squarely fixed on helping the world's animals. So we're an international animal welfare charity. We have offices in 14 different countries and projects around the world. And one of those projects, or one of our campaigns, is our Wildlife Not Entertainers campaign.
Amazing. So can you start off just by telling us about that campaign, specifically the one that we're here to talk about today?
Yeah, so we developed this campaign. Well, we launched a campaign in 2015 to really get travel companies to stop selling elephant rides. And that was really our focal point, but it's been about getting travel companies and tourists to really understand the impact they can have on animals through tourism. And we put a spotlight on some of the cruelest attractions, starting with elephant rides, which I think is easier for people to understand because they see the elephant in chains. They can understand how an elephant is brutally trained in order to do perform in shows or to give people rides just through the image of the bullhook and our description of the training process. But the campaign we just launched last month, Behind the Smile, is focused on dolphin welfare. And I think that's a little trickier for the average person to understand. But Wildlife Not Entertainers is about moving the travel industry towards more ethical forms of tourism to keep wildlife in the wild and to stop exploiting them for human entertainment.
So can you give us a brief overview of the problem specifically with dolphins in captivity?
For us, it's really their daily life in captivity, that's the biggest welfare concern. These are very socially complex, intelligent, wide-roaming, often deep-diving animals that, you know, are kept in a small fraction of their range. I think our report found that even the biggest tank is 200,000 times smaller than what they're used to traveling in the wild. And they're often in concrete pools, artificial pools that are chemically treated. Sometimes they're in sea pens, but it's still a small range. And now they're being forced to do more interactions with tourists than ever before. At the beginning of this industry, I think they were commonly trained to do tricks in circus-like shows. But now there's a whole demand and drive to offer tourists individual interactions with these animals to learn how to be a trainer for the day or even to get a ride from a dolphin. And it can be very stressful for the animals. And also, they often don't have, as our research shows, not much choice in the matter. And when that first group of tourists leaves, another group comes in, and they're really just workers in the industry. So it's a harder issue, I think, to get across to the average person because they see a dolphin's anatomical quirk, their smile, think that they're okay because they're in water, and may not realize what happens when they go home from their vacation, that animal is still performing day in and day out all year round for their entire life in captivity.
The thing that really struck me when I read Behind the Smile, because this is like one of the main issues that I've been working on for many years, it's the scale of the problem. So your report right on the front page says the multi-billion dollar dolphin entertainment industry. If you could just talk a little bit about that, what is this? What are we talking about? What are all the different elements that enter into the equation here? Why is this such a massive industry?
It's a massive industry because dolphins can be found in many parts of the globe and people are fascinated by them. It bothers me, but I also see such an opportunity here, is that the people that are paying tickets to go and see dolphins are by and large animal lovers. They're so fascinated by this animal, they want to get up close, and they have no idea the harm that they are contributing to. And so our research found that this is between $1 and $5.5 billion that is being made off the backs of dolphins. There are many travel companies that are offering tickets to people to have an experience. Admissions to dolphinariums could be, you know, maybe $40 to get in, but these individual interactions can be on average $170 American for 30 to 40 minutes to $1,000 to be a trainer for a day and have your own personalized package. So it's a lot of money, and it works out to our estimations show a single dolphin can generate about, could be up to $2 million just from one dolphin performing for tourism.
So that's extraordinary.
It's extraordinary, and that's where you see that the commercial interests are always going to override the welfare interests. And, you know, there might be individuals who are working with this industry that truly do have empathy for the dolphins and care about their welfare. But when that much money is at stake for dolphins performing and pleasing tourists, you can see where there's a huge welfare risk.
What I love about your campaign is that it's really taking a different tack than the usual tacks you would take. So you're really trying to inform the consumer and inform the actual, all of the different businesses, all of the industry that has a part to play in why tourists end up at these facilities.
We are trying to speak to the people who can unlock the solution for these animals, and that's the travel agents, the tour operators, the online travel associations like Expedia. So when we launched the report, we have launched a campaign asking Expedia to stop selling these attractions, because the research shows that they are selling a lot of them and probably make the most money out of this industry for an online travel agency.
So can you get into some of the industries that have some of the companies rather that have come on board to boycott or to stop promoting Swim with Dolphins programs?
I think it started with Virgin. Virgin Holidays announced in the summer that they would remove all captive dolphin experiences, and they're already putting funds towards the solution of bringing some dolphins to a seaside sanctuary. TripAdvisor followed soon after with their commitment to remove captive dolphin excursions by the end of the year. And in Canada, I'm very proud to say that Transat, Air Canada, WestJet, and Sunwing
made
commitments. It's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, it had a lot to do with Canadian opinion on this matter and the Canadian government taking a firm stance on this by banning captive cetaceans in June. We basically took that campaign and that message to the travel companies and said, look, Canadians have spoken up loud and clear. You don't want to be selling something that is seen as unacceptable, so unacceptable that it's now illegal here in Canada when you take tourists to sun destinations and other places where swim with dolphin experiences are popular. And, you know, it took the release of a report and the public information to get the momentum we needed. But I'm really happy that these companies know that it's the right thing to do. And they are, you know, they're taking a big leap, but it's the right one, because we know the future is, you know, the future direction of the industry will be more animal friendly.
Why do you think so many Canadians still think it's okay to swim with dolphins or to have an interaction with dolphins in a captive facility? I mean, you partly just answered that now that the law has changed. So do you think the tide is really shifting, or do you still feel like it's a very big uphill battle?
It's still a big problem to solve. I think we're seeing the shift, but it's still just a shift. We have a lot more work to do. I think we've done focus group research on this and have found, you know, that some people have said, well, it's just like a dog in the water. You know, they see the dolphin, it looks like it's smiling. It may have a ball. What's wrong with the ball? It's not like a chain on an elephant, or, you know, they don't see a whip. Instead, the dolphins are trained with fish. So it's just a harder for them to understand. But there's also, you know, the multi-billion dollar industry has a lot of money to play with for marketing and for duping people into thinking that their venue is educational and somehow good for the animals. And some of these venues have been certified, and people just don't know, you know, what is that certification? Who gives it? How are the animals assessed? I think people, you know, they know that a lot of the animals are bred in captivity, and somehow they think that that means the animal is domesticated and then that's okay, or that the animals are being released into the wild. That's what our focus group research led us to understand. anyway. And when it just shows that there's a lot more education and awareness to do. And yeah, many dolphins are still bred in captivity, but they're still being captured from the wild. And even if they are bred in captivity, they still suffer daily just the same.
It's really interesting because when you go to one of these facilities and you watch a show where the animals are essentially doing circus-like tricks known as behaviors in the industry, when you go and you just sit and observe that one time, it can seem like it's really fun for the animal. It can seem cheerful and fun. But with the kind of work I do, I've had many times where I've had to go and sit and observe what one particular animal will go through for an entire day. And then it becomes a lot darker and you really see the life of these animals. Their life is, and these are highly intelligent, as you say, sentient, complex animals with large neocortex, with the complex emotional, social lives. They're incredible animals and their life is really just this series of repetitive, unnatural behaviors.
People who are watching a dolphin show or the typical swim with dolphin experience, they're just there for maybe 30 minutes to 45 minutes. So you just get a snapshot of that dolphin's life. But if you observe for a day, you see how little break they have, how they have no choice and who they want to interact with. You can see that they're being forced to give rides to people of all sizes. And if you are there to snoop around at the end of the day when all the tourists go home, you can see them just swim around endlessly in circles or just float lifelessly because there's nothing to do. So they have a fairly long lifespan. So that's their existence. Could be 20 years that they're doing this repeatedly. So it's immense suffering to these animals. But as much as, you know, there is a lack of awareness that we're challenged to overcome, we are seeing that shift. And when people are presented with the full information, I'm quite confident that we're going to see these types of attractions lose acceptability and not be as popular as they are currently in Canadian travel hotspots. We did a behavior change campaign earlier this year where we put ads that asked people if they're interested in swimming with dolphins to click on the ad. And 88% of the people that saw the ad that were interested in swimming with a dolphin changed their mind after being presented with the information that we have in our new report. So I'm confident that with the right information and reaching these people in the right ways and with not shaming, because we've all been there where we're presented with something that we, you know, thought was okay and benign because we love animals. You know, I think that's part of the approach as well, that, you know, it's just opening people's eyes and their hearts.
Exactly. So much of this is really just spreading the word and awareness. And I think in the case of cetaceans, it's particularly poignant when somebody points out to you, if you're at an aquarium and you see this, how stark their environments really are. You have a lot of framing that goes on at zoos all over the world, which is basically, I don't know if you're familiar with that term, I'm sure you are, but when an exhibit is made to look much more naturalistic than it actually is, and that's really done to appease the visitor into thinking the animal has natural foliage, all kinds of enrichment. But when you go to aquariums, I mean, to this day, that just doesn't exist, whether you're at Atlantis, whether you're at SeaWorld. I mean, these are animals that are in stark, barren enclosures, often concrete tanks that are not even part of the natural oceans. A lot of them don't even have natural light. Many, many aquariums have dolphins that don't even have any exposure to natural sunlight or fresh air. So I think just spreading the word, don't you agree? That's probably a big part of this to get more people on board with why it's so wrong.
Yeah, and you're right. Once you pointed out, it is quite obvious to see the barren tank and how there's no choice or complexity for those animals, whereas zoos can be more deceiving in terms of, you know, fake rocks or chains on the trees. You think there's lots of trees, then you look really close and you can see the animals can't even scratch or interact with them, which is practical because they, you know, they'd have to replant a lot of trees. But yeah, it's pretty obvious once you know what to look for.
So which governments are coming around on this, or which countries are getting better with this, and which are some of the worst culprits?
There's been a number of companies that have banned the trade of cetaceans. Bolivia, Chile, Costa Rica, Croatia, just to name a few, Switzerland, the U.S. state of California, and then, of course, Canada has joined in. in June, passing Bill S-203, which is amazing. There's also a number of countries that just have very strict welfare standards that it makes keeping cetaceans virtually impossible, like the UK and Brazil and Norway. India banned the import and capture and display of cetaceans based on how highly intelligent and sentient these animals are. And I mean, there's a number of countries that need to follow through. We'd love to see the US move there. Our colleagues in our Australian office are trying to get a ban in place there. And of course, there's growing concern about the trade and display of cetaceans in Russia and China. But we are seeing a shift. And I mean, a lot has to do with blackfish. Blackfish really opened up people's eyes to the cruelty and the danger of having orcas in captivity and led to bans specific on orcas. So our report, we hope, will shine a spotlight on dolphins, which are, you know, the majority of cetaceans around the world are dolphins.
It's interesting, actually. In a couple of weeks, we're going to be airing an interview with Jeff Ventry on this subject. So he is one of the founders of the SuperPod symposiums that occur. He's one of the ex-SeaWorld trainers that's featured in Blackfish, and he will be addressing. So if anybody's wanting to hear more on this issue, listen in a couple of weeks and you'll be able to hear Jeff, who worked with all kinds of cetaceans, so not just killer whales, but he did many years of work with dolphins specifically, and he'll be addressing why it's a very big welfare as well as safety problem and conservation problem and miseducation problem to have dolphins in captivity.
Amazing. I look forward to tuning into that. And kudos to him. He's really, you know, his work has really had a ripple effect. We call it the blackfish effect in the movement. And it's quite amazing what that one documentary has done to change people's attitudes and opinion and understanding.
What is your advice to Canadians and to others around the world, how we can help stop this problem?
First and foremost, don't buy tickets to these types of attractions. Do your research before you book a trip, or book with a responsible tour operator or travel agent that has done that research for you and has committed to being dolphin friendly or animal friendly. Share information with people who listen to you, whether that's family or friends. I joke that mine don't listen to me, but if you have, you know, look to your sphere of influence. Who can you convince? Because there are a lot of people to still educate about this. And you know, we prefer to not take a shaming approach and, you know, give the benefit of the doubt that these are animal lovers who just haven't really thought about it. And I don't think people really, you know, do well when they're shamed in terms of changing their habits. It's just opening their eye to something. But also sign our petition. We have a campaign to try to get Expedia to remove captive dolphin attractions from their travel sales. And, you know, they can have a massive impact on the industry. So we feel optimistic that they'll come around, but we need more support. And people could go to our website at worldanimalprotection.ca to take action.
And I think what you're saying, it really is so important that you're right, that nobody is shamed. I mean, this is how I got into advocacy. This is how so many people get into advocacy, is because they have a love of animals. They want to swim with dolphins. They want to interact with and touch animals because animals are so fascinating and wonderful. But I guess it's just a learning process, life. And if you really stop to think about it, it's just important to make that change and to be thinking from the animal's point of view rather than your own. And there really are other ways to help, to contribute, to even have kind of up close experiences with these animals. But you just have to be a bit more creative and do your research to participate in a form of ecotourism. You can watch these animals from the land in certain places. You can go out on a responsible boat to watch them in the wild. But I agree, it's not about shaming. It's just about all of us learning. And this is how we grow. And this is how we can help make a difference.
Mm-hmm. And many of the travelers that are buying these tickets are families with young children. And I know you're a parent too, Catherine, and moms don't want to be shamed. We carry enough guilt, don't we? And you Absolutely. Just want what's best for your child, right? And you want to please your child and want them to have an amazing memory and exciting time. And I think if I've learned anything from my daughter is that the joy of a vacation can come out in very surprising, simple ways. Sometimes it's just the mystery and intrigue of looking for a gecko in a resort. It doesn't have to be something that costs so much money, or, you know, it could be something quite natural, looking for native terrestrial animals in your destination, or doing something a lot simpler. But it's something to keep in mind that the audience that is interested in this activity could be, you know, well-meaning parents that are just doing what they think is best for their kids, and presenting them with some easy alternatives might be the best way to win them over.
Absolutely. And it is funny, part of our education for our children really does need to be to teach them to value all animals on the planet, not just the large megafauna that are kind of the glitzy animals to go see at the zoo, because little animals are so fascinating too. So I think that would definitely help. And you're right, I'm a parent as well. And I absolutely get it when your child looks up at you and, please, can we go see dolphins? And it's just the hardest thing to do. But that's when it really counts, I think. And there's your opportunity to educate and present some alternatives.
Yeah, absolutely.
Animals. Anyway, Melissa, thank you so much. It was just so interesting to talk to you today and to learn about this campaign. I think it's absolutely phenomenal. We'll get all of that information up on the website as well, and hope that we can help you guys a little bit here.
Thanks so much, Catherine. It's been a pleasure talking to you as well. And thanks for sharing information about our campaign.